Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Fair to say, there's been some millage, there's been some debris, and there's been a lot of stuff that's rocked up in my front yard, and I don't know where it's come from. Adam White, can you fix that for me, please? Good morning.
Good morning. You'd almost describe it as a weather event.
Yes.
And in all seriousness, for those that are out there or those that are listening this morning, I hope everyone is okay, because it's quite serious, the amount of bad weather that's happened, particularly to the east of Melbourne, into obviously Gippsland, the Dandenongs.
Well, there's been some,
but I'm just giving specific areas.
What are you giving?
Specific. So it's been quite serious. Trees are down, over roads, on top of houses. It's been quite the night.
It's not ideal. I'm not surprised. The house nearly fell down where I was. I'm sure at one stage they were huffing and puffing until the house blew down last night at one stage.
Well, there's 71 mils have fallen at Fernie Creek of rain, 33 at Scoresby and 29 at Viewbank. So that's sort of out to the east of Melbourne. In the city, just 12, Melbourne Airport 19, and then Avalon's only had 6. So it just shows that most of it has, because it came from the east. I'm not sure whether you're watching the bureau, but
the radar
Gippsland got an absolute dumping.
I was trying to find a window to walk the dogs. I didn't find it.
No,
I didn't find
it. Why don't you just put them on the treadmill? Could you put them on the treadmill and just hold on to the lead and just sit back and watch the TV and just have them go along?
There's no TV near the treadmill.
Put the treadmill near the TV.
Have you seen the size of my treadmill?
No.
It's not just a pick and... It's not one of the... You get your ones from...
What's from on your phone?
Harris Scarf. It's not a Harris Scarf one, mate. Where you just pick it up and take it to the next room. That's not a treadmill.
I wonder whether anyone would do that. Because that's quite smart, really.
0416 905052.
Put the dog on the treadmill.
If you've dogged the treadmill or treadmill...
Dogged the treadmill.
If you've dogged the treadmill or treadmill the dog. Mm. I'd be surprised if there are too many that had done the treadmill for the dog situation. But you never know. We live in a big city.
Mm.
Yeah, dogs off chains in Bemorme, says Frank. No, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. Frank? Wouldn't be surprised by that at all. Yeah, no, I was watching the radar yesterday. I just wanted the window. I wanted the window to take the dogs for a walk, and I couldn't find it. It's too disastrous.
No.
Do you think it'll ever stop raining?
It will. Yeah, it will. But,
hasn't rained for about 15 years, and then it's...
Hey, I'm not sure about that. Some of the things
you keep telling me. You keep telling me there's been no precipitation for the garden at all. It's just sprinkles.
No, often.
There's been no real drenchings.
Well,
it's been sprinkles.
There's definitely going to be more rain today. Probably not as much as yesterday, but it'll start to clear. But
right.
I'll be interested in Gippsland just to sort of some of the amounts of millage there's been, because they said there'd be close to 200. Well, we'll see. We'll see whether that eventuates. Apparently, Nathan Buckley got sacked yesterday, Daniel. I'm not sure whether you caught up with the news.
Well, judging by the Daily today, the biggest selling daily in the Southern Hemisphere, so they tell us. Judging by the Daily today, it's as big as the drug bust the other day. It's an 8-page...
wraparound.
In fact, it's almost a 16-page wraparound. 2, 4, 6... It's about 14 pages of wraparoundness in the press today. It's a big story. Now, we weren't expecting this at this stage of proceedings, were we?
Or some were.
Although Caro called it.
Some were.
Caro did say that it would happen before Quinn's birthday.
So when you were alerted to the news yesterday, what was your initial reaction?
Really? Okay. That's about it.
Because I think, I don't want to put anyone's words in anyone's mouths, but I don't think anyone could be entirely surprised. The surprise was probably the timing, particularly after winning against Adelaide on the weekend. I think that would be the surprise.
Upon reflection, when I was sitting down watching it all unfold and listening to all the commentary and seeing the press conference and some internet challenges for some of our journalists out there, I thought, well, leading into the bye, it's probably, if you're going to hand over, it's probably the perfect time to do it.
Mm. Yeah, no,
so that made a bit of sense when it all sort of crystallised. But yeah, it was one of those, okay, yeah. Because I wasn't confident he'd be going on next season anyway.
No, I didn't, I know.
So it was just a matter of how that looked.
Yeah.
So this was one of the levers they pulled to make it happen pretty quickly, I suppose.
Yeah, because I've talked about this a bit over the last, say, couple of months, that from a Nathan Buckley perspective, it was a timing thing in a lot of ways because of the cycle of the team and when he was coming out of contract. And then when you add to that the changes at board level, the removal of the list manager, the football manager, the president, it just didn't look like he was going to survive because there was that winds of change. And I know that the players, while they still absolutely respected Nathan, I think that it had got to the point where I think they probably admitted, a lot of them, that they needed a fresh look, that they'd become a bit dour, a bit heavy. And even from Nathan's perspective, that, you know, he's obviously gone through quite a few personal challenges in recent times, and he might look back on it in time and think it was probably the best thing for him as well. So it just, there was just so much that was aligning to a fresh look at Collingwood from a football perspective, as much as all the things that were going around them. And, you know, I'll stand by my comments that whoever it was, whether it was Nathan or someone else, it wasn't someone for a 1 or 2 year deal. It was someone for an extended period because of the cycle of the list.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, the biggest issue for Nathan. This wasn't a 1 year or 2 year extension. If he was going to stay as coach, it was, we've got a new team coming through. It's a transitional time. We need someone for a long time, not just for a couple more years to see how he's going.
And well, he said that yesterday, didn't
exactly
he?
Right.
He wasn't sure he had the energy for a 4 or 5 year build, whether or not he was the right man, that the leadership, his leadership style has been established and his coaching style has been established, and there was seemingly an appetite and energy for new things. And that's how we find ourselves where we do today and where the Magpies did yesterday.
The interesting thing, Nathan, is that I stand to be corrected here, but I'll just say in recent times, just in case there's one from way back, no one has coached an AFL club for longer than 10 years, or for 10 years and longer, that hasn't won a premiership. So Brad Scott, Neil Danaher, and now Nathan Buckley were removed from their jobs in their 10th year.
Right.
And none of those three won a premiership. Two of them came very close. One of them particularly, Nathan Buckley.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I thought they handled it really well. Bucks is a pro. He's always been a terrific performer in front of the microphone and always been a classy individual.
A composed
person. So it was really well handled yesterday. Clearly not an ideal scenario for anyone. And it's despite the fact that whatever level of ownership he took of it, and whether or not it was more his call than theirs or their calls than his, it doesn't actually matter. It's never comfortable. It's never an easy thing to do. It would have been much, much easier than the packed press room there at the Magpies if it wasn't COVID times, pandemic times.
Now, I'm not real good at this.
The Robbo situation yesterday, my God. I'm going to get to that shortly. He handled it magnificently. Never easy to do. So well done to Bucks the way. And Collingwood. Mark Anderson and Graham Wright there as well. And to all the journalists who had a decent internet connection. It was a very good press conference and beautifully handled on a day that wouldn't have been easy for any of them to make that happen. George is in Layla. If you want to have your say on proceedings, you are welcome to do so. 1-300-652-927.
We're here from Sam from Swan Hill.
Well, I'm surprised that he's not the first caller, I must admit. George, good morning.
Good morning, Daniel. Good to see you back at work, mate. You can't have you being sick every day, you know.
Mate! Oh, I had to get a test.
This is your job. And listen, Daniel, you two work so well together. You can't afford to take days off.
What about when my man had 6 months off with pneumonia?
we can't have that. RSN needs you, because you're in the same boat as, I would say, Graham Kennedy and Bert Newton. You've got chemistry.
Well, that's hard, George.
It's hard to argue with that, George.
you can't afford. Anyway, that's good to see you back, Daniel, but my problem is at Collingwood, it comes in threes. We lost Eddie. We lost the list manager, and now we lost Buckley, But, that comes in threes, and I think you haven't heard the end of it. I think it'll be more. Anyway, if you go back to 2003, Nathan Buckley,
yep,
Michael Voss, and James Hurd, they share the brand like metal that year. Remember that, Glenlee, do you?
What about Adam Goods, George?
No, I'm talking about 2003, because they come equal first on a brand like.
Not all three of them. Buckley and
Rusciutto.
Rusciutto and Goods.
No, they share the brand like, all three of them.
They all won brand lines, correct.
You know, Michael Voss, and all those three champion players, and I must say they were champion players, they went on to coach their respective coaches. The respective teams, I'm sorry.
Yep.
And none of them won a premiership. And that's the truth.
That's true.
Now, what's going to happen now in football? It comes in threes too. So Nathan lost his job. I think David Triggett in shaky ground.
Oh,
and possibly Alistair Clarkson.
Oh, God.
And I can see that happening, you know. Alistair Clarkson coming from Collingwood and Sam Mitchell taking over. That's just a theory, but I can see a bit in it.
Right, George, that's a fairly large assessment of the situation and a bit of forecasting too, which I quite like from you. Speaking of, have you forecasted any quaddies of recent times, George?
Well, I got a quaddie the other day, but they're not paying much. You know, I had a winner pay $28.
Did you?
And I only paid $2,200. You know, I'm going to say that a quaddie with a horse that pays $28 should pay about $5,000 or $6,000. But that's how it is. The flexi quarters have destroyed me. I can't win any big quarters anymore.
Well, I'll have a chat to Quinny about that. I'll sort that out, George. I can't have that happening to you. But how good is it to hear your voice again on the Breakfast Club? That's very nice of you to ring in.
Mate, one day I'll come around and visit you, believe me.
Well, that would be nice.
Oh, yes, but with this COVID-19, I don't know why I'm out of bed at the moment. It's blowing a gale up here in Layla. You know, but I said I've got to speak to the boys. It's important to me.
Good on you, mate. Great to hear from you. Stay well. Look after that beautiful family of yours. And it'll be nice to catch up with you at some stage when we're allowed to see other people face to face.
Well, mate, go to the steakhouse.
Hey, now you're talking, George.
Oh, George. Talking.
He's campaigning. He's positioning.
Get on the quiz, George.
He's positioning for a Velado's voucher. Wowee. Nice work. Great to have George back with us after a long time. Long time.
Now, George rang up last week when you were away.
Oh, well, that's a long time for me.
No, that's true. Well, where's Sam?
No, I don't know where Sam is.
Sam from Swan Hill.
I don't know where Sam is. I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about the impact of that on his life, whether he's been able to cope with the news. Because he's been gunning for our man.
So Robert Harvey gets the job for the rest of the year as they start their search. Now, as far as I'm concerned, everyone's guessing as to what happens next. And that's fine. That's what happens. And, you know, they might go through a process. They might just go and get someone because Collingwood tends to do that. If you look at Collingwood, even over the last 30 years, you're looking at Nathan Buckley, you're looking at Mick Malthouse, you're looking at Tony Shaw, and you're looking at Lee Matthews. They target the big names,
yep,
or they target Collingwood favourite sons. So if you wanted the job and they wanted you, you've got the job for a while. Because history says you get it for a while. So while there's a lot of pressure on being Collingwood coach, you know, you're going to get a crack at it.
I saw something yesterday, in fact, about that. The number of coaches it was the Swamp thing. I'm going to find Sir Swamp and see what I can do about that. Because he had a very interesting stat about the number of coaches that clubs had in the last 30-something years. Here it is. Since 1987. Yeah, I'm going to throw this is part of the quiz, the unofficial quiz.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1987, so what's that, 34 years? Is that 34 years? Yeah, it is. How many coaches do you think Collingwood have had?
Four.
How many coaches do you think Melbourne have had?
14.
11. St Kilda?
9.
11. Hawthorn?
7?
9. It's very interesting feedback. Carlton and Richmond have had 10 in that time, since 87, remember. Brisbane have had 12, so they've been all over the shop. They've had the most. Adelaide, Melbourne, St Kilda, 11. Adelaide's a good effort. They only came in. Whenever that was.
Good point.
They're just throwing them around willy-nilly, like Lazy Susan stuff. The Adelaide Crows. Carlton, Richmond, 10. Essendon, Hawthorn, Bulldogs with 9. I was surprised with Essendon.
Yeah, Essendon's... Wow.
But then you look at the recent 15 years, you think, oh, it probably makes a bit of sense.
Well, you'd have to count Gary O'Donnell in that number because he did 1.
Yep.
With these Sheeds at the back of the box prodding him with crutches, pretty much.
Fremantle, North and Sydney, 8. West Coast, 7. Fitzroy and Port, 6. Fitzroy sort of skewed the data a little bit there. 5 for Geelong, so they've been really stable. 4 for Collingwood and Gold Coast, and 2 for GWS, but they don't really count to this point.
So, that's the sort of the point I was making. I never had any idea about that stat, but with Collingwood, despite it being such a high-profile club, which is seen as being always under pressure,
volatile.
But I think a lot of it's got to do with the selection of the coaches have either been favourite sons or the big names. Malthouse, Matthews, the big names with premiership experience, either as a player or as a coach.
Shaw.
And then Shaw and Buckley. Yep. So,
we look at the other big one. Carlton's at 10, Collingwood's at 4. The traditional, and Essendon, 9.
Yeah. I'm surprised by that Essendon one with Sheeds being there so long.
Yeah, me too. That was the one that stood out to me, I must admit. But I think recent times has caught us off guard there. For the Bombers. So that was interesting. That was very interesting. But so Robert Harvey gets to fill in, and he's been close a couple of times in like the North Melbourne job. I think he was up really close in last season when David Noble got the job, who we're going to speak to later on in the morning. So he'd be really keen to put his foot forward, I would think, Robert Harvey.
He would. History says the caretakers never get it. But you never know. I mean, they might win 7 of 9, and then because that kind of I've just said what I was about to say. But if you look at in recent times, that has kind of changed a little bit. As I said, look, at the end of the day, I don't know what they do. I hope they go through a process and get the best coach rather than just go for the name, because sometimes whether that is a Ross Lyon situation, who's pretty comfortable with what he's doing, are they kind of convincing him to come out of retirement for the right reasons, all that sort of thing? And Ross talked about that last night on Footy Classified. Do they try and prize Clarkson out of Hawthorn? Or do they, as I said, go through the process and go, an assistant coach does get the job? It's not what Collingwood does, but we'll see what happens.
Have we got any Ross from last night? So listen to Ross, because I think he's an interesting character.
Very interesting.
In all of this. So this was on Classified, I imagine, last night.
Adelaide did reach out and North Melbourne. I took the calls because they're AFL clubs. There's 18 jobs in the country, and that, they deserve a lot of respect. And I like to listen. I like to have a conversation with those people. And I certainly wasn't in the frame of mind, but, you know, it was nice that you got called. It was a show of respect. But if someone called me, it didn't matter. They are big Melbourne clubs. And I don't like this. David Teague is in a job I think he should see out the year. I should be reviewed and reviewed heavily. So let's just talk about the Collingwood job. They're one of the biggest clubs in the land. Incredible tradition, enormous. If someone rang me for Collingwood and said, can we talk? Of course I would sit down and have a discussion, but I can't give you a flippant answer here. I'd lock the key on it, and trying to make the best of a new career at a property investment house, Wisel Property Group, and Channel 9 doing the right thing in Triple M. So for me, it's such a big position. Nathan Buckley is, you know, a revered figure. We saw him handle it, and he's still got chewed up and spat out. So it's not a simple flippant, yeah, I'm interested, because they are big jobs, and they need someone that's unconditional, committed, and the right. But again, I'll go back. If Alistair Clarkson's available, there is no competition. Just pull out whatever he needs, have the conversation, and get him signed.
Nice little plug for the business there from Ross the Boss.
You know what, you
brilliant
hear that
stuff from him.
You miss Ross. I miss Ross in football. I do. I'm not sure. I certainly wouldn't ever want to be coached by him, but you do kind of miss him in football.
Yeah, you certainly know you've been coached by Ross Lyon, I reckon. Or coaching with.
It wouldn't suit my style.
No, I don't think it'd suit your style. I think that's pretty straightforward, that he would not suit your style. But he's open to the conversation. He'll take the call. There's 18 jobs, as you said many, many times. But if Clarko's available, there's no competition.
Yeah.
Let's just give it to the great man.
And I think this is the interesting thing out of the Collingwood scenario moving forward, because it is Collingwood, that, you know, and Ralphie talked about this yesterday, about the dominoes falling. And you've got Carlton, who are a little bit iffy about their whole football department at the moment. That's fact.
Yep.
Big club. You've got Collingwood. Now, Collingwood, now there is a vacancy. We've talked for years about Alistair Clarkson, whether he's committed to Hawthorn long term, and he keeps saying he is, but is Hawthorn committed to him long term? You've got Sam Mitchell as the apparent coach coming through that is coaching his own club at the moment, or his own team in Box Hill. They're trying to set up for him an appropriate process to give him the best chance of success, but really he's not ready yet, if we're to be truthful. But now, does that have to be rushed through at Hawthorn, or whether Collingwood try and grab him? That, to me, is the interesting part. Then you've got Brad Scott, who you know, we all look back now on his time at North Melbourne. It didn't end particularly well, but gee, he has a good record for someone that had limited facilities, limited resources, etc. North Melbourne always seemed to be thereabouts when he was there. There are some interesting characters, some interesting people in this whole, you know, thing that will play out over the next period of time.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Brad's got his interesting one in this, I reckon. Although he seems very happy in his role at AFL Victoria as the main man there. So, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Mark Williams is getting prominence this year. Justin Lepage's stocks have risen since he stopped coaching.
Well, coaches' stocks rise when they're not coaching.
It's funny about that.
Yeah.
It's funny about that. I think Robbo's just logged into the program this morning. Robbo, are you there? Robbo? No, he's not quite there. Can we mute him? Can we mute him, like Buck said yesterday? Funny was that. Can we mute him?
What happened, mate? What happened?
It's funny.
Well, it'd be pretty wild out at North Warrandyte this morning.
My word.
In Mark Robinson country.
My word. He probably should have come into the city for that one yesterday. into the office. Didn't quite work out for the chief. But it was a very, very funny subplot going on in that press conference yesterday. I got a big kick out of that, I must admit.
Do you think Nathan Buckley will coach again?
No.
Okay.
Do you?
I don't think he will initially. I reckon his competitiveness will get the better of him, and he will.
I think he'll work out that he's pretty good at the other stuff too.
Well, but he's brilliant. Like, I was lucky enough for a short period of time to work with him at the ABC. He was brilliant at Channel 7. Absolutely brilliant at Channel 7. So he's got a job for life there if he wants it. But that competitiveness, that missed premiership in the trophy cabinet, I reckon that will still burn. And yeah, he's still young enough to have another crack at it with a break of 5 years if he wanted to.
5 years, righto. Okay, we'll put that in the time capsule, the Breakfast Club time capsule, and see if we can pull it out in 5 years' time and say, I told you so, or you told us so.
Text here, Sam Mitchell not ready, please elaborate. Well, he's only coaching a club for the first time this year, his own team for the first time this year. So I think ideally, now you're probably never ready when you start, but I still would think he would, in an ideal world, be at least 1 year away.
Having said that, not many players, not many assistant coaches get a chance to coach their own teams. They're assistant coaches, then they become senior coaches. So at least he's got that element of running a program, controlling a program, up his sleeve. Brett Ratton style back in the
day. Yeah, absolutely. But my point is with Sam is that they're trying to actually set up a process for him. If he was to go in next year, I think it would be a bit earlier than what they would hope.
I wonder if Phil Murphy would know this stuff. He knows everything. He's host of ESPN Sports Centre. He's back with us on The Breakfast Club. Phil, great to have you with us.
Great to chat to you, boys. Yeah, I'm keen to talk a little Paulo Fonseca, if you are. I mean, we can cover whatever you need.
Well, what do you know? I've never come across Paulo, I must admit. What's he got for our Tottenham fans out there?
Well, I know a little bit more, marginally more than you've discovered on Twitter, only because he managed Shakhtar Donetsk, and I'm a Man City supporter, and City always seem to find a way to be paired with Shakhtar.
I've
seen him. I know he's Shakhtar and then Roma. So, but Spurs, man, they just seem to be cursed. They've gone how long without a major trophy? 30-odd years?
Well, we'll get to Whitey. He's a fan of the Spurs. That's why I like to bring stuff up about the Spurs.
They
don't seem to be very successful, and I quite like that.
Yes.
I'll tell you who do look pretty successful, though.
Probably the Super League founder that had the biggest question around them, in all honesty.
Right. Okay.
I think that's fair.
That's probably fair, too.
I think
that's probably fair. I'll tell you who is in full swing, though, and has got plenty of momentum behind them is the Brooklyn Nets in the NBA playoffs. So are they the number one seed? Are they the team to beat, Phil?
Well, in terms of seeding, in a very literal sense, they're not the number one seed. They fell just behind the Philadelphia 76ers, which is probably the best thing the Sixers have going for them, home court, should they advance past the Hawks, which I think they're going to, and the fact that they don't have to beat both the Bucks and the Nets in that three-horse race that has been the Eastern Conference all year. The Nets are absolutely terrifying, and remember, they beat Milwaukee without James Harden, and coming into that series against Milwaukee, Brooklyn were just 9-9 for the season when they had Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, but no James Harden. So everybody thought, okay, this is the Bucks' opportunity. And the Bucks were flat in game one, and then they got flattened in game two. They trailed by 49 points at one point, the biggest lead the Nets have had in any game, regular or postseason, in the last 25 years. The Bucks trimmed it to 39, but they're in a position now where to advance, Milwaukee would need to win four of the next five against Brooklyn. And you look at NBA history, in a best-of-seven format, teams that go up 2-0 advance 93% of the time, and most of those 93% weren't getting an all-star back at some point in that series. So, Milwaukee are pretty well under the pump.
So Philly are carrying that seeding, and they're carrying a bit of pressure with that. Joel is fit and firing. He was good again yesterday in their game against Atlanta, which they won. Ben was sort of rolling, doing his bit. Tobias Harris scored really freely. Have they got the makeup and the experience on what they've learned the last couple of years to actually go the whole way?
Well, the biggest thing the Sixers have going for them is the defense. I mean, Ben Simmons is a Defensive Player of the Year finalist himself, and we'll find out who won that award in the next couple of days. Could even be in the next couple of hours. The NBA hasn't released a schedule for that, and we kind of find out, you know, hours before tip who's won it. Joel Embiid's a tremendous defensive player. He's a tremendous offensive player. The thing that Sixers have against them is when Embiid leaves the floor, I mean, the Hawks are eating them alive, and they don't really have an answer for that. Embiid can't go 48 minutes a game against Brooklyn. He just that wear and tear would be too much. So they need to find a way for not just their reserves, but their other starters, the guys you mentioned, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, Danny Green, Seth Curry, to find a way to be cohesive so that for the dozen or so minutes Joel Embiid sits, they can be effective. So while they will have home court, assuming the Eastern Conference Finals are between the Sixers and the Nets, I think punters would lean toward the Nets because of the Nets' form and just the formidable nature of that big three.
The Inner Sanctum of the Saints this morning, and they're at RSEA Park at Moorabbin. And Brad Crouch is a new Saint who's halfway through the first season. I imagine he's feeling a bit more comfortable about things. He joins us. Good morning, Crouchy.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
We are going well, mate. We are going well. How are you feeling about your world at the Saints and the change halfway through your first season in new colours?
It's been good. I've loved the change, and I've loved getting to know everyone, and you know, the change has been huge for me. I think, you know, obviously on the field at the moment for us, it's been a really tough year to date, and you know, it's up and down year for us definitely. But you know, the way we're tracking at the moment, we're working pretty hard, so hopefully we're going to have a great second half of the year.
How is that that balance of perspective been reached by you? I mean, you come in, you're all energetic, you want to really perform well. You had a slow start with obviously suspension early doors, and you really found some rhythm, but the team's going no good. Is it hard to get to get the feeling you perhaps wanted when you walked through the doors that first time?
Yeah, at the moment it's I think everyone at the footy club at the moment, we're frustrated. You know, we haven't had everything really go right for us this year. We've had a lot of stuff happen. You know, obviously injuries are a huge thing. Form has been ordinary, and there was, you know, a few games earlier where we got pumped. It's definitely frustrating for us, but you know, we're still really focused on getting the most we can out of this year. We think finals are still there for us for the taking, and you know, there's a lot of teams that are in that window, so we're still working towards that.
You mentioned the word, Brad, frustrated. Take us inside the change rooms at the moment. What are the sort of conversations you're having as a senior player, a star new recruit, to kind of keep things calm but get a bit of urgency into the place, because your season is on a bit of a knife's edge at the moment?
Yeah, exactly. I think at the moment, I think guys that have played a lot of footy, they know that, you know, when things aren't going well, you definitely have a good hard look at your, first of all, yourself, and then you know, the team has to look at, you know, the way we're playing, what, you know, defense, our offense, you know, what we're doing in the contest, all that sort of stuff. It gets really analysed pretty hard, and it, you know, in comparison to when things are flying for a team, you sort of seem to just happen and everything flows for you. But at the moment, we're working through a lot of that stuff. We're doing having a lot of meetings and training really hard at the moment, especially up here in Sydney at the moment. So yeah, that's sort of how it looks like during the week at the moment for us.
And how do you identify the goal-kicking issues? How do you fix the goal-kicking issues? Is it one, we've talked to a couple of players from clubs about this year. Do you not talk about it to not make it a bigger mental challenge, or do you hit it between the eyes and say, no, we've just got to get better?
Yeah, we've tried a little bit of both, to be honest, in the last probably month or so. it's really hard because, you know, you don't want to be going off at guys for missing goals. It's just a skill error, but at the same time, it can prove so costly for your team as well. So, you know, we're the main thing we're trying to do is have lots of shots at goal and practice it at the moment. And we've been able to do that up here because we've got a lot of time up here in Sydney as well. So, you know, at training, we're trying to put more of an emphasis on it and finishing goals and stuff like that at the end of drills and when we're fatigued and stuff like that as well. So we're certainly working pretty hard at it.
So how do Rats review that game against Sydney? I mean, opportunities were there for you throughout the game, not just late. Obviously, they've been highlighted, but throughout the game. What did he say were the positives for you, and what outside of perhaps the goal kicking, what were the areas for improvement?
Yeah. So the main positive was where we stayed in the game. Like, I think there was probably two or three times during the game where it looked like Sydney were going to go away from us, and they started playing some pretty strong footy, and we found ways to wrestle momentum back. And then, yeah, the needies, I guess, too, is we had a lot of chances to win the game, and particularly late in the game, which was pretty frustrating. I think, you know, even though at the moment we haven't got our best 22 out in the park and we've got a lot of injuries, we still had the team to beat to win on the weekend. There's no doubt about that, and we can win that game. So it's pretty frustrating for us, and you know, it might look a little bit different if we had a win on the weekend.
Speaking of the injuries, I want to talk about Adelaide this week as well with you because it's a relevant conversation. But Dan Hannabury hurt his calf again yesterday, so the reports tell us. And I imagine, you know, he's such a quality player. He's been out there the last couple of years. I think the world changes a bit for the Saints week in, week out. Hasn't been the case, and he haven't seen him all year this year. How's he around the club? Now, is he with you in Sydney at the moment? Is everyone up there with you? I mean, but how's he been mentally? Because I imagine it's enormously frustrating for him to not be able to get out there and do his thing.
Yeah, definitely. He's up here at the moment in Sydney. I think he heads back on Friday. I think, you know, it was really flattening, particularly he hurt his calf just before we played, and it sort of flattened the whole group, you know, because he's one of them guys that's just so handy for us when he's out there. And you know, his communication and stuff is really, really good for us as well, and his experience. So, you know, we sort of felt like we'd have him back in the next couple of weeks, and it sort of flattened the group a little bit, knowing that he'd hurt himself again. And, you know, I feel for him big time. And, you know, I guess we've sort of had different careers. I had a lot of injuries early days in my career, and so I sort of understand what he's going through and how frustrated he is. But He's a ripping bloke because he's one of them guys that, you know, as soon as you finish a game and you've just had a bad loss, he's the first one down there in the rooms talking to guys and helping everyone out, no matter sort of what mood he's in or, you know, how he's going himself. Like, he's just one of them real team-focused guys. So we still love him around the footy club, and, you know, we just want him to get back out there, but it's really frustrating for him.
Is it a bad one, or is it how long do you think he'll miss now?
It's pretty similar to some of the ones I think that he's done at this stage. So it might be another 3 weeks or something like that, I think.
Okay. So you're in Sydney. Take us into what that's like. Obviously, you can't be in Melbourne, so it's almost like a mini hub for you at the moment. Where do you train? Where are you staying? Can you get that separation from footy? What's it all like up there?
Yeah, it's been good. Like, we stayed in Manly over the weekend, and then I think on Monday we moved into the city. So yeah, we've trained at the SCG just on the outside there the other day, and then today we're training and doing our main training out at Homebush, and then I think we're training somewhere again tomorrow. So we're a bit everywhere. But yeah, no, it's been pretty good, and like we're still under the Melbourne restrictions, so you can walk out and get a cup of coffee with a mask on, and no one else up here is wearing a mask, so you look like a bit of an idiot. But other than that, it's not too bad.
Well, let's talk some swimming, because this weekend is a very important weekend in the world of Australian swimming. The swimming trials in Adelaide. There was a bit of drama about the Victorians and their capacity to be a part of it. You can catch all the action on Amazon Prime. They're doing an outstanding coverage, live coverage across the 6 days. In-depth interviews, swimming analysis, back-to-back racing, and some of the best experts in the business. One of those knows plenty about this sort of stuff. Nicole Livingston is her name. She joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. I do know a little bit about swimming and so footy. Actually, at the launch of the swimming coverage, I had AFL people in the audience texting me saying, what do you know about swimming?
That can't be right.
It's true.
Oh, well, they're sacked. You get a chance to sack them. If they don't know your magnificent history in the world of swimming, then they don't deserve to be.
No, I took it as a compliment, Half. It was good.
Well, you get to change hats this weekend. For the swimming with Amazon Prime. You're part of the team with Grant Hackett and John Rooney and Annabelle Williams, Matt White, John Harker, James Magnuson, all part of the coverage. You've got a great crew rocking up for Amazon this week.
Yeah, they've thrown everything at it. And to be honest, we haven't changed the way that we've covered swimming for decades. And they've bought all the bells, all the whistles, and people are going to feel like they're actually living the roller coaster of an Olympic trials, which will be fantastic.
And there's been some roller coasters. I mean, have you put yourself in the position of the Victorian swimmers who are hanging on by a thread, working out whether or not they're going to get a chance to compete this weekend?
Well, to be really honest, Hacky and I are in Melbourne, and we're actually not able to go either. And I know it's not quite the same as trying to get yourself to the Olympic Games, both of us having been there, but we're actually calling from Melbourne because we couldn't get into Adelaide. So part of the team are in Adelaide, and then Hacky and I are here. But, as the border was going down a few weeks ago, I actually saw the majority of kind of the swimmers that have a chance to make, and I mean this with respect, because competing in Olympic trials is really important for opportunity. But those guys that are under the high-performance blanket of Swimming Australia were actually at the airport getting out. I think there's about 25 swimmers that entered into the Olympic trials here in Victoria that can't get in. One of them is actually my daughter's swim coach, a guy by the name of Andrew Lauterstein. Olympic medalist. He was, well, making a quiet comeback. He's been in swimming with the rest of the squad that he's coaching, doing a captain coach. And he was actually showing some pretty promising form in the 50 freestyle. So speaking to him yesterday, it looks as though he won't get to go across. But it's unfortunate, yeah.
See, is there any way around that? I was reading that last night about, I mean, it seems completely unfair that they would be so disadvantaged when you've got the Olympics every 4 years that it's just like can they swim in Victoria in like a time trial situation or something?
I was actually dreaming about that overnight. I've started to dream about swimming again. It's a great idea, Whitey, but what Swimming Australia actually did is they opened up two other events if the case happened that borders were closed and the event couldn't happen. So one of those events was the Australian Open that took place on the Gold Coast, which Andrew, as in this example, did race in. Unfortunately, you know, it's in his preparation phase, he wasn't completely ready to go. So the time that he's posted there wouldn't be enough to get him into the top two in the 50 freestyle. And then there was a second meet at the New South Wales or Sydney Open recently where there were some really fast times recorded. Andy didn't go to that one, using him as a case example, but Swimming Australia did say that if something happened, they would consider times from those two events, but the main event is in Adelaide.
Right, okay. Can you tell us a little bit about Kaylee McEwen? Because she does swim in the stroke that you specialised in, and she could be the next big thing in world swimming, not just Australian swimming.
Yeah, I reckon she will be, and I'm really hesitant putting pressure on a young girl, but Kaylee McEwen is fantastic. She's got a sister, Taylor McEwen, who raced for Australia in breaststroke. But Kaylee's racing 100, 200 back. She's also racing the 200 and 400 IM. And during my swimming career, I raced against a girl by the name of Christina Egazegi, one of the most accomplished swimmers in the world, who raced 100, 200 back, 200, 400 IM, and won 4 individual gold medals at the Olympic Games. So, I think Kaylee, we could see a world record. I hope John Harker's ready with his world record call. I actually think we could see a world record in the 200 backstroke. She's in that invincible age that is just glorious, where you jump in and every time you jump in, you swim the best time. And her best times are the fastest times in the world. She's sitting second in the all-time 200 backstroke list with the time that she currently has. And she did that at that Sydney Open just recently.
Let's get to David Noble, the North Melbourne coach, who I reckon has a car park right out the front of the office. I'd be very, very disappointed if he didn't. David, good morning.
Good morning, boys. No, I'm on the street, Half.
On the street? What?
There's very limited car parks around North.
No, Dave, I'm hearing you actually park over at Nick Theodosi. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not allowed to get an Uber to training. I know that.
No. Please tell me, Dave. Now, I wasn't certainly intent on going here, but while we're there, let's go. Please tell me you've got a car park in the grounds at Arden Street?
No. I'm sorry, mate. No, I'm just with everybody else. First team, first serve.
Can I have a chat to your manager? We need to sort that out. I'm not sure they've done the right thing.
So, Dave, what time do you start work every day? Is it like 6:30 to make sure you secure up the number one spot?
Yeah, I think there's about a half an hour window, John. If you're not in by that window, you're walking about 5 minutes.
How's your world at the moment, David? You're midway through your first season at the Kangaroos. It's a learning year, clearly, which we know. You've come off the bye. You've got a chance to reflect. How have you seen the first half of your first season?
Yeah, we had a review last week. Half we were able to sit down, both as a playing group and a particular coaching group, to just work out what we'd seen, some of the data, what that's telling us that lines up, with what we're seeing visually. So we think we're making some inroads, no doubt, into the way we'd like to shape our ball movement and our defence. I think our defence is one thing that we've tried in the last sort of 5 weeks to work really hard at reducing some score, which we had some success with. And then we felt like that there are teams that are being a little bit more aware of our ball movement and not, giving us as much ground as what we'd like to. So there's some learnings there around how we've got to continue to attack. We want to keep goals out inside 50 differentials. If you just look at a couple of basic things, it's pretty good, but we just need to score more and defend better.
Dave, learnings from a team point of view, what have you learned about yourself as a coach this year taking over the helm?
I think, Jono, it's just to not sweat the small stuff. It's more about the holistic approach, I think, is the way the structure we've now set it up here, is to make sure that there's good energy in the place. I think that there's a consistency of our message. I think the players appreciate, that we're not moving around too much in regards to tactically. We're adapting to a few of the teams, obviously, as we go. But I think from an overall view as to how we want to play, we've been really strong on our contest, really strong on our offence and our defence. And we've tried to keep it, simple and direct. And the learnings have been really strong in that area. So I think from my side of things, I've just worked really hard, Jono, I think, to just be consistent with my message.
So, David, when we look sort of at the halfway mark of the season, if you take the ladder away, have you reached expectations on the development of your team? Or how would you assess that? I know it's difficult, but how would you assess it at halfway?
Yeah, I think it's the opportunities that presented themselves for us, Whitey, I think has allowed us to expose our young players without risk, earlier. We've been able to put way more games into a few of our younger Corral under sort of 3 year guys that is just going to hold us in such good stead going forward. Their ability to learn the game, make mistakes, progress forward, the Jack Marnies, the Curtis Taylors, Taron Thomases, and then, our new guys with Tommy Powell, Charlie Bizarro, Will Phillips coming in. I mean, I think that has been what we've been able to shift our thinking to really quickly. So, I think as coaches, I don't think we sit down and go, we think at this point we'll be here. I think we look at it more on a week-to-week basis of continuing to improve, and we get to halfway, and I think, we've ticked that box. I think we've definitely improved and exposed our guys into some key roles. Bailey Scott doing a run-with role. We had Tom Powell and Will Phillips playing a run-with role on Laird for a period of time. So we've been able to move our young guys into some of those really high experience roles that I think are just going to hold them in good stead going forward.
Yeah, because you can kind of look at the injury issues you've had two ways. You haven't had that sort of training to get into all your squad on a sort of a weekly basis with how you want them to play. But at the same point, you're exposing players on weekends, perhaps earlier than you thought, to the way you want them to play. So you sort of get good and bad in that situation.
You do. And look, and the injuries are what they are. We don't want as many injuries as we have got, but it's little control by the time you get to sort of your main training and your game. And I think that's right, Whitey. I think there's not a lot of time that I really spend on the fact that we don't have these guys. It's like we've got this group. This group needs to be educated here. We need to keep advancing them in these areas, the consistency of the message. And, I've got a great bunch of coaches from an educational and an experience perspective that I think are helping our young group and
I have to say, we've been extremely well led by our leaders. You know, our older guys have particularly stepped up to the mark a lot, I think, led by the skipper, who's, you know, having a really good year at halfback.
He's been playing awesome, Dave, and you get the chance now for your players. They've had their break. They're ready to go against the Giants. You've got time then to look at the Oppo during these bye periods as well. Put more time into the GWS Giants. What are your expectations, though, from your boys coming off the bye now to step straight back into action?
Yeah, well, Leon's been able to reset that group really well, hasn't he, after the first few weeks. You know, their ability to sort of control the ball, I think, Jono, is something they've really improved in. You know, the uncontested marks, the ability to sort of move the ball, spread it with a bit of width in that midfield is probably something that, you know, they've done really well. So, yeah, we have to be conscious of what we've got to do around the stoppages, obviously, but then I think it'll be a battle of being able to control the ball and restrict some score and then hopefully get ourselves into a position where we have enough opportunity to put some scoreboard pressure on. It's probably the one element of pressure that, you know, we talk about a lot. There's lots around physical pressure, contested ball stoppages, clearances, hard ball, loose ball, but we sometimes forget the help that scoreboard pressure can actually give to you as a team.
So how do you guard against, I'm not sure if there is a formula or a system you can actually use, Nobes, but guard against young teams tapering off or falling away physically in the back end of a season? You know the grind. It's tough out there week to week for 23 weeks. Is there a way you can sort of manage the playing list to try and minimise the damage, so to speak, in terms of the drop-off?
Yeah, I think there is half. I think the two things that, you know, we really make sure that, again, we talk about this thing called energy, and I think that it comes from us as a group of coaches. I think if the players feel that energy is still there, then that'll actually replicate itself with those guys.
Josh Kennedy from the Sydney Swans, he's got similar biceps, and he's used them to sign a contract extension through the week. Very big muscle to hold a very small pen, but sign a very big deal, I'm sure. Josh, the co-captain of the Swans, joins us. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
How are your biceps looking just at the moment?
They're coming up at the moment, mate. It's pretty cold here this morning, although, yeah, I'm not sure compared down to Victoria, but for Sydney, it's pretty fresh.
Was there ever, you re-signed with the Swans, as I said, you extended your contract at the end of next season. Josh, was there ever a problem or a thought that you might not, or is it just a matter of course to get that done?
Oh, the only discussion around whether I would or not was with Horse and Charlie Gardner, the GM, in terms of what next year perhaps might look like, and those conversations will still happen. But it was from my point of view, I was happy to sign it as soon as possible and sort of put it behind me and be able to just relax and focus on the rest of the year.
Was the performance of the team any factor at all? Whitey and I love watching Sydney. We've talked about you a lot on this program at the start of the season as to the excitement we had about what was coming through. And then all of a sudden, the team exploded in the first month and put up some outstanding performances. And you find yourself now in this awesome position at the midway point of the season. Did it have any factor?
Yeah, absolutely. It had a big factor. Obviously, the last few years have been challenging. Especially, you know, my first 10 seasons, I believe, at the Swans were playing finals, and you know, everything was good, and you sort of expect that to continue on, but it's not the case. But in the last 2 years, been challenging. But yeah, to see the improvement and the work you put in over that time really take shape and be transformed into wins on the board. Yeah, it certainly helps and makes playing footy, as you all know, much more enjoyable when you're winning.
Josh, those wins are going to take you towards finals footy this year. You're in a great spot at the moment, sitting equal third. Hawthorn this week, then the bye. But after the bye, you've got Port Adelaide, West Coast, and then the Bulldogs. How much from your experience will those three matches play in where you sit as a team in terms of mentally believing that you can actually have a real impact this year?
Yeah, that'll be big. Obviously, we've got to focus on this week and you know, bring our best footy against the Hawks. But yeah, those three sides. And if I to reflect back to the earlier part of the year when we beat Brisbane and Richmond, both away games. Yeah, that belief and confidence you get from that is huge, and that'll be the case for this week and the three following weeks, absolutely.
How do you think you're going as a team at the moment, Josh? We as Huff said, we talk about you guys a fair bit. You're winning, but in the midfield particularly, you're not getting the big numbers as a group that you were perhaps earlier in the season, but you're finding a way to win.
Yeah, that's right. And I think as a midfield group as well, we've playing a lot more numbers through there. And in terms of it, individual numbers, they're not as high as previous years, but that's probably by design. Having said that, you know, Mills, he stepped up and Parks is still having a really consistent year. But then you've got James Robot and Molly Florence had a really, really consistent year. So that's not too much of a concern. It's more of, you know, the overall team numbers compared to the opposition, which generally have been pretty positive in areas that we've wanted to focus on.
Hey, Josh, take us through the form of Tom Hickey. You would have played a lot against Tom, and you would have obviously, you know, roved through him at different stages from an opposition point of view. Now he's putting him down your throat, but did you expect him to get to these levels that he is performing at the moment? He is in all-Australian form.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I did. He's one I just didn't mention before, but yeah, he's been unbelievable. You know, when he came to the club late December for a couple of weeks, and just his ability to communicate what he wants to do and how he goes about it. You know, he's really crafty in the ruck and thinks his way through it, and his composure on the ground too. I mean, in different stages throughout the course of the year when we've been down a few goals or team have got a run on and his ability to win a clearance or grab it out of the ruck, you know, it really takes a lot of pressure off us mids and he's been outstanding this year.
Glenn McFarlane, though, from the Herald Sun, is talking about the Magpies, and they've got no coach at the moment. Well, they've got one, and he's got one more game left in him before Robert Harvey picks things up. Macca, good morning.
Good morning, Half, Whitey and Jono. A bit happening, isn't it? 250 days ago today, guys, Collingwood knocked West Coast off in an elimination final. Does that not seem like the greatest eternity ago ever?
It does seem a long time ago.
Bucks on the bin, smashing down the lid.
Yeah, that does seem a long time ago. I want to ask you this, Macca, straight off the top. If Dom Sheed misses, are we here?
No, absolutely we're not. I might still be out partying, celebrating, I reckon, boys, with regard to that. And there might be a few with me as well. No, we're definitely not here. If Nathan Buckley is a premiership coach, and let's go back. I've looked at it over and over again, probably about 7 million times that Don said. It's a myth, and it doesn't. But no, absolutely not. He's a premiership coach in that regard. And that's why people will judge his coaching career on a number of different things. You look at his 54% winning percentage. Like, it's a very good percentage. He's a good coach. Potentially, he's not a great coach. But if that Dom Sheed misses, or if Jordan DeGoey spoils the McGovern mark, we are in a different situation. And Nathan Buckley absolutely gets another contract. And we just don't know. It's that sliding doors moment of history, isn't it?
Well, it is.
When Dom Sheed kicked the goal, how many seconds were left on the clock?
Yeah, it was a tick over 90 seconds, so it was just under a 2 minute. Not that I've looked into it too much. there was basically under 2 minutes to go. It was one of the most extraordinary kicks as we know, but that Collingwood Football Club, I don't see that as a joke. I thought that was just one of the great grand finals, and that was Nathan Buckley's high point the week before to actually knock Richmond off in a preliminary final, and they did everything right possibly in that grand final, but you know, unfortunately we're beaten by a better team on the day.
Glenn, looking forward now, and Robert Harvey will take over, I think Robert Harvey will do a fantastic job, but what does the footy club need from your point of view in terms of the type of coach to take this group forward?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jono, because I think what they'll do this time, and it's very uncommon-like if you like, is that they're going to about to launch the biggest, most expensive search for a coach in history. I think that's a good point. They need a person. Like, everyone's talking about these big senior players. You have a look back at these big senior coaches. You have a look back. We haven't had a recycle coach win a premiership since Mick Malthouse in 2010, which is interesting, isn't it? There's only been two this century. But they need a person that's going to actually be able to be around for 5 years. I think that's the most important thing. This is a five-year build for Collingwood. It's not going to be a quick turnaround. And a person that can engage with both young and old. They've got that sort of scenario at the club where it's a good mix of young and old. I'm not wedded into... I think there's absolutely no doubt they'll go for the high-profile candidate. They have to. And that's Alistair Clarkson, and Hawthorn are already being strong and saying that's not going to happen. The problematic nature of Clarkson under contract, Chris Scott under contract, opens it up a little bit to someone like Ross Lyon. But I personally wouldn't discount. I've had a fair bit to do with Sam Mitchell. I absolutely wouldn't discount Sam Mitchell from the discussions. We know that he's a great football person. This is only his fourth season as an assistant coach. But, guys, as you know, Huff, he's been training for this all of his life.
He's an impressive young man, no doubt about that, and seemingly a career coach in waiting, or, yeah, just giving the right timeline. The question will be the timeline for Sam, or whether or not he thinks he's ready after 1 year or midway through his first year coaching his own club and his own program at Box Hill, which will certainly enhance his capacity, I reckon, Macca.
But... So it doesn't suit Paul Roos half? It doesn't allow Roosie to come in for two years?
It's a sort of a vintage sort of Roosie setting, isn't it?
Yes. The superannuation, Roosie, that superannuation just keeps going up and up, doesn't it, boys? But just on Sam Mitchell, I won't give too much away, but I know that 2 to 3 weeks ago he hadn't been approached by any club. He hadn't even been approached by Hawthorn in terms of going on for too much further. And that's why I say Collingwood, we've got to take them at their word. They've said that they've not officially spoken to any candidate. I hope that's the case, because I reckon yesterday, guys, was one of the more dignified. There's not been a lot of dignified nature of Collingwood Footy Club in recent times, but it was one of the most dignified exits I reckon you'd ever see.
And I think that's what Nathan Buckley has been throughout his coaching career, Glenn. He's always put the club first. And I still go back to that final they lost to Port Adelaide, when he made real hard decisions on that list because he felt he didn't have a team that was good enough, and that put himself under pressure because of the cycle of his contract. But he put the club first. And then even when he had that success in 2018, he was prepared to really change his ways because he was told, kind of thought he had to, but to get the best out of that list, he had to change. He listened and he did it. And so I wasn't surprised with how yesterday played out, because I really think he's been selfless throughout as coach.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And it's a great point about that 24, the change that footy club the way it was. He could have taken the easy path. He didn't. We remember back to brash young man in a hurry when he was a 21-year-old, when he had that famous nickname that we won't go into because you can't talk about it on radio. But, you know, that he was this young man in a hurry. He just put people offside. But as a coach, he's been very different. And very dignified. I think he showed his vulnerabilities in 2018, and that's why it would have been one of the great Collingwood premierships if they had been able to orchestrate that again, if Dom Sheed misses. Because he showed his vulnerabilities, which was a rare thing for Nathan Buckley, and I think he's done that. He probably went a little bit the other way in the hub last year, which I think probably concerned a few little people here and there. And this Graham Wright decision that I think has been coming for a couple of weeks, and he's been... I think there's been a suspicion from Nathan that was going to be the situation. There's been some feedback with players, and while the players were still supportive of Nathan Buckley, I'm convinced about that, there was definitely within some sections of the playing group an appetite for change.
So is it as simple as that? Is that it was just an appetite for change, or was it Nathan's private life and just how sort of dour he'd become potentially as a coach and a person? What if you had to nail it down to one thing, what do you think it is that he's not there?
I just think it's a time thing. I think it's a 10 season. I don't think it had anything to do with his outside of football scenarios or anything like that. I just think that he'd been there 10 seasons, and I think the club realised that. And I think there's been a little concern about the game style this year and where that's at going forward. This has to be a situation where Collingwood's not just looking at 2022, in a sense. They're looking at 2024, 2025 before they're in the window. They want to play a different style. So I think it was just a time. Every season has a time, doesn't it? And he articulated that really well, Nathan. He's been there. There was no bitterness. He said he didn't know that he would want to be there in 5 years' time, but he certainly wanted to be there for the next few. And it's a sad ending, but I just love the way he went out yesterday. It's just so dignified, and I think it worked. I think it worked a treat from the club. It was one of the few things the club actually got right for, you know, since that West Coast Eagles victory in the elimination final last year.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.